Welcome back to the Backcountry PA Podcast. This is episode 128. And on this one, we had the pleasure of sitting down and talking to Steve Shirk of Shirk's Guide Service up in the Allegheny National Forest. Pretty much we recap how Steve's season went for himself, for his guiding service. We talk a lot about public land, big mountain bucks here in Pennsylvania. We hear some stories from this year. We talk trail cameras. We talk about some history that he had from the trail cameras of what he saw this year. And the cold fronts and weather-wise. And the debate topic that we have is, with the trail cameras, with this live new feature, is it going to take away from the woodsmanship of hunting? We have that topic in here, but let us know what you think about that. We'd love to hear it. Love to hear what you guys think about that. For the partners, go to Our Grounds Coffee Company. Use code BCPA. That'll get you 15% off your entire order. He has K-Cups coming out, so if you want K-Cups, he's coming out with them. And he has another coffee flavor coming out, which is going to be epic. Can't wait to try that. Tideway is not just camo. They're also hunting boots, as well as blinds, fishing rods, ice shacks. That I wouldn't recommend using ice shacks right now in Pennsylvania because you're not going to have any ice. But go to their website. Use BCP18. That I get you 18% off your entire order. Forget Genetics. Forget Genetics was, they were just at the Great American Outdoor Show. We went and talked to Barry. Just wanted to catch up with him. Ethan bought some stuff, and he's going to be trying some new stuff this year up at his piece of private up in Potter County. So I'm excited to see what happens up there. Use code BACKCountryPA, BACKCTRYPA, and that gets you 20% off your entire order. Now, hunting season is over, but predator season never stops. So if you want to get your predators aged, go to deerage.com. And use code BACKCountryPA, all capitals. That gives you 10% off your very first order. Remember to keep hunting, keep fishing, keep your tradition, and always enjoy the fishing process. But without further ado, let's get to the episode.
You got to adapt every season to what Mother Nature throws at you. My feed, whatever you want to call it, of a mountain buck is usually second. It's gone. Had a major front rolling in around the 12th, and on the 11th especially, we got 2 inches of rain. It just seemed like right after that rain and that cold front hit, like November 12th, phenomenal day. I mean, I shot my buck at like 8 in the morning, which was a nice like 4-year-old mature 8-point. Mm-hmm. Not a super high scoring deer, but a tough deer to pass in the big woods. We had a client that he texted my dad. My problem is I'm freezing so much because this little tiny stream that is usually ankle deep, he tried crossing in his rubber boots, and I think it was up almost near to his waist.
Yeah.
So he still crossed and hunted, but he's like, man, I'm free. Dad went in, Chuck Rush socks and rubber boots across the stream. Guy puts new clothes on, kills 142-inch 12. That's why I love the big woods, public land, mountain buck. In my opinion, it doesn't get any more challenging than this. And then when I do have success, the feeling I know is as good as it's going to be, probably better than it's going to be anywhere in the country. I'm Steve Shirk, and most people know me as the owner of Shirk's Guide Service.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
I have a whitetail guide service up here in northwestern Pennsylvania in McKean County. I exclusively guide public land and mountain buck style, so I'm kind of in a unique field. You don't find a lot of outfitters that kind of relate exclusively to public land in Pennsylvania, especially here in the mountains. I've done it for over 10 years now, and it's one of those things everyone kind of told me that I'd be crazy and, you'd never have success with that. But mm-hmm. actually, past 3 or 4 years, it's gone really, really well for me. We've booked out and literally, like, you know, last year I was completely booked by end of January, and we're almost about there this year. So
wow.
The good Lord's definitely blessed me with that. And, you know, I've learned a lot about deer hunting. I've hunted, you know, my whole life, but guiding definitely has made me a better hunter. And that's usually what leads me into these conversations is
yeah.
everyone wants to pick my brain about what I'm seeing and doing and learning. So
yep.
we'll have fun talking tonight.
Oh yeah. I mean, 'cause the thing is, like, everyone wants the, you know, that mountain buck. That yep. seems to be a big, I'd say, even from when we first started the podcast 3 years ago, I think that's really taken like a huge impact in PA. Like, people want that mountain buck now.
Yep. There's so much public land in Pennsylvania and so much mountainous terrain that it's just, you know, I think years ago, it wasn't quite as popular, but it's so intriguing now. And there's so many people having success at it, that it seems like everyone kind of wants to give it a try. So here I am. I've done it my whole life. I don't know any other way or style or terrain. I live right in the mountains, so
yeah.
my house is right on top of a mountain. So that's what I've been born into, and I don't think I'll ever switch.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to switch my career either.
No, living the Pennsylvania dream right now, I'll tell you that.
So I don't know personally of any other guides in PA that guide for purely whitetail in the big woods. Like, you hear a lot about elk guides, especially in like Elk County, Clinton County, Potter County, you know, up around where the elk are in that zone.
Yep.
But why do you think that more people aren't doing what you're doing?
Well, for a couple of reasons. Number one is, it's way harder than what a lot of people think it is. I mean, yeah, if you're an experienced hunter and, you know, you've been in these areas and you've given it a fair trial, then you'll kind of know where I'm coming from. But, you know, it's not your typical, you know, hunt or outfit where, you know, the deer are extremely predictable or, you know, the terrain is easy where we hunt. I mean, you can't even use ATVs. So
right.
It's as hard as it gets in about every way you look at it, a lot of low deer density areas. So it's extremely challenging. And then secondly, because it's on public land, and I get a lot of people that ask me this as well, but, you know, people work so hard just to figure out a certain area or mm-hmm. finally have a good section of ground, even, you know, especially even on public, but they're confident in hunting. And then, you know, they don't want to give it up or share it because
yep.
you can also – you know, with guiding, you know, I have been pretty fortunate. I haven't run into the issue a whole lot, but you can definitely, I could show any of these clients anything, and then the next year they don't need me at all, and they could be hunting and overall kind of ruining what I'm doing and my spots and really taking advantage of me. So I think, you know, there's multiple reasons that have pushed people away from that. But overall, I guide in such a massive area, and In these woods here, I mean, you'll have one area that's good one year, and then the next it's not. And you got to adapt every season to what Mother Nature throws at you. You know, we haven't had acorns in 2 years, and mm-hmm. we got areas that are usually great when those oaks are producing. So like I said, you just never know from year to year. So that's what hiring a guide really can be helpful, because I'm in the woods literally 300 some days a year scouting and hunting. So, you know, someone can come here and know that their guide has already put more work in than they ever could, mm-hmm. and they can be, you know, in the right spot immediately, versus it might take a whole year or at least a whole season before they really get on something that they feel confident with.
Yeah, I mean, I had a cabin in Clinton County in what state forest was that, Ethan? Was that Susquehannock?
That might have been, yeah. If not, pretty darn close.
Yeah, so I had a cabin up there, and this was like the first year.
NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that you can stay close to your team even if you don't live in their town. Like, maybe you're a Raven who married a Seahawk who got a job in the land of the Falcons. With NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live, because you shouldn't have to change teams even if you change towns. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/presale to get $50 off.
Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refund. Subscription auto renews.
I really ran cameras up there. I ran three cameras. So, like, it wasn't like I was running a lot of cameras up there. But
sure.
The previous year, I found a bunch of scrapes underneath one tree. And ran a camera underneath up there. And there was no action on that the whole summer. And then finally it lit up in September. And, like,
yep.
then you had, like, this almost like a month window of really seeing a lot of action. Like, there was big buck coming in, checking those scrapes, freshening them up, all that kind of stuff. And then, like, you had the normal activity during the season where you have a buck or a doe come by once in a while. So, I mean, if I had the time, like, you know, if I was a guide, you know, and put a bunch of time into this, I imagine I could, you know, understand when to hunt that area or where to hunt compared to that scrape, the wind, all that kind of stuff, the food source. So, I mean, yeah, if you're like me, 3 hours to drive up to my camp, you don't really have the benefit of doing that.
Yep, and also my job, like, I do landscaping, so mm-hmm. We go into that time in the fall when landscaping really slows down, so, you know, then I'm really able to put a lot of time in. Guiding is really not something in this part of the country that you can really do full time. So mm-hmm. to do it effectively, you kind of have to be in a field where, you know, it just kind of meets your other careers and jobs. So it just kind of blends really well with my, you know, with my job, my lifestyle, and, you know, obviously I'm passionate about it. And
mm-hmm.
I'd hope to say, or someday look back and definitely say, that's what I was meant to do. I can't say that I ever thought I was going to do this, but here I am today, and I'm definitely enjoying it.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd be doing a podcast, to be honest with you.
and here we are, yep, having a blast.
That's just how life goes.
Yep, but yep.
It's great. You guys got a good thing going, and hopefully it'll just get better and better for you.
Thank you.
If you're listening to this podcast, I know for damn sure that you'd rather be going on vacation in the mountains instead of the beach or the city. Check out the Spike Camp, located near the PA Grand Canyon. It's a cozy little cabin that sleeps six. You got one bathroom, three bedroom, a dining room, a kitchen, a living room. You have Wi-Fi, you have TV, central air, and heat. You're close to the PA Grand Canyon, Cherry Springs, PA Lumber Museum, Pine Creek Rail Trail, and downtown Wellsboro, with some shops, wineries, and a brewery. All for $129 a night. Go to mvr-mvr.com or follow the link in our description. We'll take you right to it.
So we have a debate top, and I feel like you're a great person to ask this question to, because you run a lot of trail cameras. Mm-hmm. So there was the ATA show was in, when was that?
Was that last week?
Was that last week?
2 weeks ago? Yeah. It's within the last week or two, yeah.
The one in Indianapolis, I think, or
yes.
Whatever, or...
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. So trail cameras, you know, there's cell cameras, there's standard SD cameras, but now the cell cameras are turning into live feed cameras that we can use out in the woods. Yep. So my question for you, and we can have a debate about this, or maybe we're on the same page about it. Mm-hmm. How do you think that these live cameras are taking the fair chase and the woodsmanship out of hunting?
For the most part, no. In my opinion, is I try to look at, for instance, I don't know hardly anyone, especially in the environment I'm hunting, that you get a picture like right now and you're going to go kill that deer like in an hour. Like these deer aren't just sitting in front of that camera 99.9% of the time. And I look at the fact that, like, okay, there's a lot of people that really just don't have the time to scout enough or hunt enough, but they know, geez, if I put some cell cameras out, that can definitely do the scouting for me. I don't have time, especially people that, you know, their hunting area might be hours away, but yet they can use that tool to help them. To me, I see way more pros than cons. Yes, I do see it making things easier for hunters. And certainly it speeds up the process of you know, intel. And yeah, it might, some people, you know, in some circumstances might get lazy with them. I'm certainly not that way. Especially, I mean, I love cell cameras, and if I could run more, I would. My issue is I don't have enough cell reception in most areas.
Yep.
But what I like most about them is I'm not putting any impact or presence on the areas that I'm hunting. I don't need to go in there and check the cameras and disturb anything and keep an eye on it that way. But like I said, to get to my point, and this is only my opinion, I'm not really going to argue with anyone because I can also see where they're coming from. But I just feel like in today's age, hunting is such a vulnerable sport. I mean, it sounds like it's booming and that, but really, if you look in most any state, it's actually a dying sport. So if you can any way get more people in the woods, more people involved, and more people to be confident and successful hunters, then I feel that you're doing something more positive for the sport, and that could definitely enhance what the future of hunting is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because I think we put out a poll on Instagram not too long ago when we first had, you know, this topic come up when we first learned about it. And I think the majority of people were kind of against the whole live feed thing from at least just some of our followers. I mean, there's a couple people that were all for it, but I think the biggest concern, obviously what Cody said about the whole fair chase thing, but like you said, you're not going to sit there and see it and then kill it within an hour. Like that's realistically, that's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
But I think one of our biggest concerns would be like future generations, whether it's, you know, people our age, our children one day, whatever, they lose that woodsmanship. Mm-hmm. And personally, obviously we don't want to do that. We always speak woodsmanship and respecting nature and this and that. Like, we don't want anyone to lose that. That was one of the biggest concerns that we had with these constant upgrades.
And I guess this, you know, another one of my opinions on that would be the only woodsmanship I see is you not going in the woods as much, but it still takes skill to effectively have success with trail cameras. You can't just strap that thing on any tree in the woods and, you know, get on a good amount of deer or even mature bucks if you're a mature deer hunter. Then, okay, so you get a picture. Here's my thing is, and I mean, I run a lot of cameras, obviously. I mean, I know you guys know, but I can tell you that most of the time when you get like a picture now in a lot of different areas, you may never see that deer again.
Yep.
A lot of deer, it's just a one-time thing. You're better off in a lot of situations, depending on what you're hunting, but you're better off trying to get ahead of when that deer is going to come through that area versus once he's there, no telling when he comes back. Like, I just think that people are slightly overconfident with some of these cameras, too. They are absolutely great tools. You can learn so much from them. I wouldn't have so many if I wasn't, you know, benefiting from them. But as far as I still, in my opinion, see a lot of skill needed and woodsmanship to really have success with these tools.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, I'm kind, the more I sit here and I soak it all in, you know, like mm-hmm. one, when I first started hunting, when I, well, first of all, I got my first trail camera ever 3 years ago. Yeah. And now I have 13 of them, which is breadcrumbs compared to what you have, Steve.
No, hey, that's still good though.
And I get turned around with how many. Sometimes I forget what cameras are. Like, there's one I got to go pull. I'm like, I'm not gonna. I don't need to keep that one out there. So now I have three at home that I can put out. But I got my first cell camera. All I got was a SpyPoint cell link, just because I can plug it into one of the cameras and just have it go.
Yep.
So like. Over the 3 years, like, my understanding of cell cameras got better and better, you know, so I don't really have anything against cell cameras, because especially with a daughter on the way, you know, it makes things easier, so I don't have to go out there and check them. Just like you said, I don't have to put boots on the ground in the woods when I have it in the right spot.
Yeah.
I think the live cameras will grow on me, but right now it's very hard to just accept that, because, like, you see Game Commission, they have the live feeds of elk, of bald eagles, all that kind of stuff. But do you think everyone's blowing it out of proportion with this live feed stuff? Because, I mean, there's a lot of people are complaining about it, and a lot of people are, there's big, I guess, fights going on over it, like,
sure,
not
well,
actual
I
fights.
Mean, I've seen the elk many times. In fact, this year I'm going to be speaking at the Elk Expo, so I'm very familiar with what they're doing with those live feeds, but.
Mm-hmm.
The deer that I hunt, and I think the deer that a lot of people hunt, especially right. in Pennsylvania, there's not what I would call a live feed
yeah.
benefit. Like these, you know, in the Game Commission, you know, the places where they have the elk, there's food plots, there's, I don't even know, they might even put like mineral blocks or whatever. They
yeah.
might not do quite that, but those elk are pretty stationary in a lot of areas. The live feed, whatever you want to call it, of a mountain buck is
mm-hmm.
usually seconds, and like I said, it's gone. So once again, I think people are underestimating just maybe if they haven't really been in those shoes, like how challenging it is still, even, you know, once again, if you're, you know, getting footage or even a photo, whatever,
mm-hmm.
You know, on your cell cam, it's not really going to help you. It definitely doesn't increase your success probably more than 2 or 3%, in my opinion. Like, minimal,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely starting to see that. You know, it's when it first comes out, I think it's a shock and awe type effect where it's like, whoa, live cameras, like, what is this? You know, I think that was the main thing, I think. And the more you think about it, like, it's like, just like you said, Steve, like, we can't, if it's, you're in the big woods, like, if I had one at my cabin, like, I'd have to walk 4 miles to be able to get to that camera before.
Yeah, that would, that deer would be 10 miles away from you by
yeah,
then.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's my whole point. Now, there are some places where, you know, maybe someone's got a little wood lot and there's an apple tree there and you shook the tree and 500 apples came down,
yep.
and all of a sudden, bam, there he is. You know, he's under the tree right now, and you're 10 minutes from him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I could see, like, you know, and here's my thing, too, is someone might say, Steve, you're just saying this.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I wouldn't want to kill a buck that way. Like,
no.
To me, that sounds a little too easy. Like, I want to figure him out. I want to be challenged. That's why I love the big woods, public land, mountain buck, because in my opinion, it doesn't get any more challenging than this. And then when I do have success, the feeling I know is as good as it's going to be, probably better than it's going to be
mm-hmm.
anywhere in the country. And that's what I truly want.
Yeah.
Yes, do I use cell cameras? To a certain extent, yes. I don't use a lot of them. I think this year I only had like 6 or 7 out.
Okay.
I have some areas where I want to go next year that I realized that I could put a few more out, but my number one reason why I want to use cell cameras more is intrusion.
Yeah.
If I can stay out of those areas and, you know, sit back and just kind of at a week at a time monitor what's going on in an area, and not even so much always what a buck is doing, but learning how deer coming through an area, is it, Is it nighttime? Is it morning? Is it certain weather conditions?
Right.
What's the doe population like? If I can have that, you know, and not have to go in there and bother deer, that's where I think, honestly, you have the best success with cell cameras. If somebody doesn't agree with that, then I would say, okay, well, then make sure if you were to believe in, like, you know, scent-free products and scent elimination, you might as well not be using that stuff either, because you're also, you know, if that's, I'm not saying that I believe in all that, but my point is, like, it kind of is the same concept. Like, then you wouldn't be putting any scent in the area, so that would be unethical or unfair to the deer. There's
right.
so many different things out there that you could say, you know, we're kind of stepping over the line. But honestly, I have not seen anything out there that you can use in Pennsylvania that makes me think, like, okay, we aren't giving the deer a fair chance here.
I mean, think about when tree stands first came out. Think about the uproar in that.
Exactly. Yeah, you probably have that. I mean, huge advantage with tree stands.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's just like I said, like, if look at it this way too, like when rifle scopes came out, I remember we have a lot of old timers at our camp, and the hunters would always say, you wouldn't believe how many more bucks were being killed once we all started using scope or putting scopes on our rifles. Like, you know, now 150, 200, even 300 or 400 yard shot.
Yep.
In certain areas is very possible. Like, it just, everywhere you look at, there's an upgrade, or, you know, new technology has advanced and made our hunting, you know, somewhat better. But like I keep saying, is as technology gets better, you almost see more hunters dropping off, like, especially young hunters. So I really think it's going to even itself out. And as long as they never invent, like, a trail camera with a live feed that has, like, a rifle in it where you just...
a blow dart.
Touch the button on your phone and just, boom, you kill it.
Then
you're probably never going to hear me say that I think trail cameras are unethical.
don't give them any ideas, Steve. Don't.
A blow dart trail camera that has him fall asleep so that he can get there within, like, if you can get there within an hour. He's still going to be there.
You'll be all right.
Exactly. Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's already trying that. And honestly, you would hear me say, all right, enough is enough.
Yeah.
I'm not hunting.
I think that would cause a huge uproar.
Yeah.
Huge.
No.
Yeah.
You'd be the fastest they ever passed a bill of banning something ever.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like Utah.
And honestly, if anyone wanted to use that, to me, you're not a true hunter.
No.
Like,
no.
Anyone with common sense can know whether, you know, something's ethical or unethical.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, yeah, there's a borderline, and that's why we come up with these conversations, how you can see goods and bads from certain things, you know, like we brought up cell cameras. But I always try to weigh it out. Do I see more good, or I see more bad, or is the bad greater than the good? And for me, I don't see being unethical.
Yeah. Yeah. I can start seeing that now. You know, it just takes some time. I think everyone has to just stop and, you know, really think about the big picture here.
But honestly, that's only my opinion, and I would never tell anyone that, you know what, you're wrong for thinking they are. I don't see anything wrong with someone thinking that, because trying to protect the ethics and keeping the sport as clean and challenging as possible, I mean, I'm all for that too.
Yep.
But, you know, just from what I see and my own experience, it's not affecting my decisions as far as where I'm going to draw the line. I'm definitely going to use those products.
Yep, I agree. Well, that was a good debate topic.
My name is Mr. America, and this is Backcountry PA News. Let's get into it. So this first one comes from OutdoorNews.com. It's a cool one. Giant Pennsylvania elk designated as state's non-typical archery record. This thing is incredible. Dave Kammerdiener's record-breaking Zone 10 archery elk from Pennsylvania, 446 inches, over 45 inches more than the current state non-typical archery record. This one blows my mind. 21 years of entering Pennsylvania's elk lottery, and he's finally selected for that bull tag. Hunt of a lifetime on in September 10th. Great story. Not going to give you all of the details, but he got a long shot, located the elk 200 yards from where it had been hit. And it was just really well done by Dave. Very patient to get this hunt, very patient in hunting the animal and to get her done. So good on you, Dave. We'll have the link to that one. You can read it for yourself in the description. The last two really are going to be very similar, but they are separate articles. So I figure I should talk about them kind of on their own. And we're just on the cusp of going to the outdoor show and seeing what they had there. Lots of great booths and some cool stories and ideas that are being tossed around there and displayed there. So if you get the chance, if you had the chance to go check it out, congratulations. I hope you really enjoyed it. It's always a great time to go to the outdoor show. And if you didn't, there's still opportunities next year. Outdoor show shouldn't be going anywhere. So make sure that you check it out. This first one that we have is the best winter backpacks of 2023, tested and reviewed. This is a little bit more of you you camping and outdoorsmen, woodsman type people. But let me tell you, they have some really great, great reads and great ideas for some of the best backpacks of the year. Best overall, which one's the most ultralight, skiers, hydration, full day, hunting, resort riding, all these different criteria. Really, really good. I really recommend that you check it out, outdoorlife.com. And it just so happens that we also have another one from outdoorlife.com. Yes, the best gun cleaning kits of 2023. Tested and reviewed. You want to find the right gun cleaning kit for you in this review. This is another great one to look at here as we're going into the off season. You're going to potentially be getting some deals on backpacks depending on what time you get them and where you get them. You could also be getting deals on gun cleaning kits, and it's a time to do it, right? It's getting cold out there. You want to make sure you're taking care of your firearm, and we're going into the off season. So if you're going to be storing that rifle, storing those guns for a little bit, you want to make sure they're all nice, cleaned, and lubed up. So it talks a bit about the methodology of cleaning your guns, the best gun cleaning kits to clean any gun, and then looking a little bit more at some of the more specific things that you may want to get for certain weapons, what some of these different universal kits can do, and some of the essentials that you should get while cleaning your gun. All really great advice and really great tips. Go check them out, outdoorlife.com. Really short, really sweet this week. I know that we didn't necessarily talk about the articles, but I want to give you some time. I want you to think about all the things that we've talked about in the news, within the podcast, the stories that we told from this past season. I got tagged soup, and it was a little bit of a disappointing year, but it was the first year, and I've learned a lot. I hope that you learned a lot, too. That's the whole point of us doing Backcountry PA News, so that I hope that you learned a lot. Extra, extra, read all about it. We do have a little bit of breaking news ourselves here at the Backcountry PA podcast. Congratulations to Cody and Jess as they had their baby girl this week. Congratulations to you, to your new addition to your family. We wish you the best from everyone here, part of the team. Thank you so much for everything that you do for us. And if you get the opportunity, make sure you say congratulations to Cody and Jess. I want to thank you for joining me on this episode of Backcountry PA News. Remember to stay safe out there and keep your tradition.
How did your season go this year?
Hunting season, guiding season, both? Or
Well, I mean, if you want to start with your personal season, love to hear about personal season and your success and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. So I hunted two states. I always hunt two states. I hunt PA and New York because actually where I grew up was only a mile from New York. So New York was always like kind of like the back door still, you know, to where I lived and where I hunted. I only got a buck in Pennsylvania archery season, November 12th. I thought, as far as Pennsylvania goes, because I only hunt in New York later in the year. But anyways, I really thought my season was pretty slow for a while. I was having had some pretty good action around some cold fronts, especially my two best days were before I killed my buck were October 19th. I saw like maybe three bucks that day, you know, morning and afternoon sits. One mature buck I did pass up.
Okay.
And then things got pretty slow for me after that. I was seeing a lot of small deer.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and this is pretty uncommon, and honestly, I'm not bragging, but usually I'll have a few more encounters, but I never had a big buck encounter until November 8th. So I went from October 19th to November 8th, and I hunted mostly at least a couple hours every day. A few days here and there I didn't hunt, especially with guiding. But November 8th, I had a really good day. I saw, you know, I think four or five bucks that day, one shooter like 50 yards, probably like 135-inch deer.
Okay.
And no luck there. And then all of a sudden things dropped off for me right then. But then we had a major front rolling in around the 12th. And then on the 11th especially, we got 2 inches of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like right after that rain and that cold front hit, like November 12th, at least up my way, was just a phenomenal day. I mean, I shot my buck at like 8 in the morning, which was a nice like 4-year-old mature 8-point.
Mm-hmm.
Not a super high scoring deer, but a tough deer to pass in the big woods.
Oh yeah.
I almost wish too what would have happened, especially if I sat it out or even hunted into the next day, because November 13th, as far as even my guiding goes, like we killed two bucks on the 13th, and my trail cameras like that. I think you guys know, like, I keep a lot of data.
Yep.
Like, November 13th was our best day for buck movement and mature buck movement.
I saw that, too, yeah.
Did you? Yep.
Yeah.
It was just, like I said, that 12th, 13th was just phenomenal activity. I kind of, like I said, because basically I only hunted hour and a half, you know, and I nailed a buck. But it would have been interesting to see, could I have really had a mega giant encounter in a 2 or 3 day stretch there. But
because that was that weekend, that was the 3 day weekend there. That was when we had that Sunday, and I was up in my cabin as well, because I was like, you know what, I'm going to go up here and hunt 3 days straight, and I was going to hunt over those scrapes we talked about earlier. That's where I was going to hunt over 3 days, you know, because there was one of my buddies, Mark, he was like, use the Steve Shirk method and hunt over this scrape 3 days in a row, and your chances are going to be a lot higher. And I would have had one too. Like, there was a big buck that came by right there. I think it was that Sunday, and I think we had snow at my cabin. I think we had snow, and so it downpoured the 11th, like that night. So I have to cross a creek to get over to the other side. So like, I have to drive my truck across this creek, and it's not really even a creek; it's more like a river now.
Yeah.
So it got so high I couldn't drive across it. So I had to completely change my game plan.
Yep.
And it sucked, because like, I wanted to go back because I had really the 11th, when I was coming down off the mountain right before it started really downpouring, I had a really nice buck come across in front of me, and he was like at, I would say, 100 yards down. I saw him coming up the same trail that I came up just a little bit ago, and I saw him cross down the ravine. And he was going up the other side. I'm guessing he was going towards bedding is what he was going, but he had the wind in his back the whole time, which that was the first time I saw that.
Sure.
But I tried grunting him, all that kind of stuff. He didn't come over. He just didn't care.
Yep,
and
he just had one thing on his mind.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, that's when you said about that, I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Cause that's when I had some big buck on camera and seen some that weekend.
Yep. And you'll have spots in those major fronts that, are really prime points of the season, especially during the rut. Like, there's certain periods where a cold front is going to be way more effective and increase deer activity than others. But, like, everything lined up so good there that you're going to have spots that, like,
I didn't get a buck on camera in this spot all season, and then pow, two bucks came by. Like,
yep.
The movement's so good on those days that it's just amazing where those deer show up because they're traveling so far.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were really good days. And it's funny how you brought up the river situation. We had a client that he texted my dad, and he said, my problem is I'm freezing so much because this little tiny stream that is usually ankle deep, he tried crossing in his rubber boots, and I think it was up almost near to his waist.
Yeah.
So he still crossed and hunted, but he's like, man, I'm freezing, and I have my soaking wet boots. So my dad went in and chucked fresh socks and rubber boots across the stream over onto the bank, and then the guy puts new clothes on and kills a 142-inch 12-point like an hour or two later.
Jeez.
Wow.
That's so awesome.
Thank God that we were able to keep him in the stand longer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like I've seen a lot of things now where, like, would you trust your buddy after you kill a deer to bring you a sandwich in the woods?
Yeah. And
that's kind of like this, what I thought of.
Bring him socks
and
boots.
We knew it was such a prime day. Like, everything was lining up so good, like, you're going to do whatever you can to keep clients in the tree. So
Yeah. We
got to bring you clothes but it's funny, like my dad, that stream was roaring so bad. He's like, I wasn't even going to dare cross that. He said, I just chucked it right across the stream.
Yeah.
So right out onto the bank and left it there for him. And like I said, he came and got him and was able to sit it out longer and kill the giant.
Man. How? So did you say what time did he shoot that buck?
I would say that was probably, if I had to guess, maybe noon or 1. I mean, it was like either late morning. We have the time written down, mm-hmm. but I don't have it with me.
Right.
It was later, though.
Okay.
It wasn't early. It was similar to the weather you saw. It was even, if I remember right, it might have even started possibly as a rain even on Sunday and then turned right back to snow, or it was at least a really wet snow.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah.
Yep, and I had another client that hit a big buck that day, and luckily we had snow because we tracked that deer for a mile, never caught up to it. As far as we know, the deer laid down one time, but the bed had a ton of snow in it, so we didn't think we bumped it. But after that, the deer just walked forever, and we lost blood. But kind of long story short is, had we not have had snow, we would have never found that deer because we left its track go and then came in the next morning and ended up tracking it down and finding it.
Oh, but, okay.
Yeah, it's just and that was a Pope and Young deer too. So it was just seemed like it was the break that we needed because mm-hmm. honestly, before then we had a lot of 70 degree, up near 80 degrees, just really, you know, a lot of really warm days about the first, you know, 10, 12 days of the rut,
mm-hmm.
and it was just super slow here. A lot of people weren't seeing nothing, even myself. Tons of night pictures on the cameras, but it was, you know, just amazing. Once we got that right weather and, you know, you got a taste of it,
yeah.
Things were just on fire.
Oh yeah. Like, I even, on the 13th, actually even jumped a buck, bedded down with a doe, like on top of the mountain, some thick stuff.
Yep.
And, I mean, just from that experience alone, I was walking the path, you know, and then, you know, a young doe, I saw her like about 100 yards away from where I jumped this, and that was probably her mom that was bedded down with that doe. So have you seen that? Like, have you seen where like a yearling, whatever doe or buck will stay around their mom within like 100, 200 yard radius?
Usually I don't see it like that. I think I have seen that. Most of the time what I've noticed is that yearling will have a certain area, and it's almost like it knows to stay here. This, you know, in mainly, you know, we talk about like buck core areas mm-hmm. or whatever, but does have their core areas too, and those yearlings have learned that. And usually they'll stay in that core area and, you know, move very little. They're super dumb, though. That's one thing I can tell you. Like, very vulnerable time for that deer to be alone like that.
Yeah.
And but that's usually a good sign. Like, if I'm going through, you know, an area that I know is holding does, and all of a sudden I see, like, a lone fawn or a lone set of twins, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, okay, somewhere there's a hot doe. But what I generally see, if it's a mature buck, is usually a mature buck will try to take that doe out of that area, sometimes a half mile or maybe even further. Like, if there's some other bucks in the area, he's going to try to bring her somewhere where he can not have any competition. So that's usually what you see, but I don't see those yearlings following quite that extreme. But I'm not saying that what you see is super uncommon, or what you saw was super uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're pretty dumb. There's a few times where I've seen them, and they see me. I know they do. I'm just chilling. Like, I've been tempted to just run at them and chase them, because it's like, I need you to be a little more scared of me. Like, I don't want you to stand, because someone, like, personally, I won't shoot a young doe. Like, I'll let a little doe walk every time.
Yep.
But if, like, I see a little one and they're just not caring, whatever, it's like, go away. Be scared, because someone else will shoot you.
Yeah.
Yep. And I even worry, you know, about predators, and I think they're more vulnerable to get hit by a vehicle and just everything. They've never had that moment yet without their mother, so as soon as she's gone, you know, they're a little clueless on what to do and how to survive. So it's a very vulnerable time for a young deer in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then hopefully I'm doing them a service and helping them survive a little longer by scaring them.
Everyone else needs to start doing that.
Everyone else needs to do it.
The good thing is it's usually, you know, 24 to 48 hours at the most.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's weeks. So they can get by for a day or two or three at the most. They should be fine.
Yeah.
So you said you hunted New York. You said you always hunt New York. My family has a cabin. We're up in Potter County.
Okay.
So New York, not that far from us.
Within
an hour drive, and we're there.
Right.
It's always been on my radar to go hunt New York.
Mm-hmm.
What's public land hunting like? Is it much different than Pennsylvania, or is it very similar?
There's similarities and there's differences. The similarities are the terrain. I'm hunting the same mountain range, like I said, where I grew up and even where our camp is. A mile away north behind our camp is New York, so right up over the mountain. So it's very similar terrain. But unfortunately, I see way more hunting pressure. That's an issue, at least in gun season. I don't think archery would be bad at all, but the gun pressure, like opening day, and I did do quite a bit of still hunting because we had snow, and I'm talking opening day of gun.
Right.
I think I saw 16 or 18 guys, which is, that's usually, I mean, that's very heavily versus in Pennsylvania opening day, you know, when I was guiding, I think we might have seen two, and the year before that, I never even saw one.
Wow.
So, talking way more hunting pressure in, you know, that part of New York versus Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And that really plays a huge factor, as well as another thing that makes it more challenging is they don't have antler restrictions. That where I hunt, there's like no logging. It's more of a just, you know, big woods style habitat. There's the buck to doe ratio is horrible. Like I saw 59 deer first day of gun season and only 2 bucks.
Dang.
Wow.
That's actually that was actually the most deer I think I've ever seen in gun season in any day. So that's not super common, but still on a decent day, I probably average 25, 30 deer.
Mm-hmm.
And most days you don't see a buck, or most of the bucks I do see are just year and a half old. So,
okay.
Like I said, the terrain's similar, but way more pressure. It reminds me of the old Pennsylvania days.
Yeah.
Now there are, like I said, I need to get better over there. I don't scout enough because my business is Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
My focus is Pennsylvania. So I need to learn some more areas in New York better because there's some big chunks of ground that, you just know the areas are so big that I highly doubt they're heavily pressured.
Yeah.
But I've just in the past few years, like, seen a huge increase in pressure, and a couple reasons is I hunt what's called Allegheny State Park, and it's like the bear capital of New York. Bears are like the thing over there. Well, these past two seasons, they opened up bear hunting, which the opening day of bear is opening day of gun. So now you got all these people that are over there to try to get a bear and maybe a deer at the same time.
Oh, man.
Whose decision was that?
What's that again?
So whose decision was it to make that happen? Oh,
jeez.
Gosh.
Yeah, I mean, that was New York State and probably, the park officials as well. And another thing that really increased the pressure is it used to be just shotgun and muzzleloader, and now they've allowed rifles, which I'm not so much against that, but I saw a massive increase, too, and hunting pressure once they allowed rifles. Like,
oh, yeah.
It seemed like it's even a lot more Pennsylvania people are like, you know what, I have a deer rifle. Because it used to be a lot of people just didn't have confidence or maybe not even owned a slug gun or a muzzleloader, mm-hmm. and they just weren't quite as interested. So now it's just way more pressured over there. But and that's not really I shouldn't make excuses, but I need to start doing better and adapting to the pressure and finding more new areas is what I need to do.
So you said New York where you hunt, they don't really log out in the area you were hunting.
Zero logging. There's no logging at all ever anywhere over there.
So what are you looking for? Because, I mean, up near where my cabin was in Clinton,
yep.
The area that I hunt, there was no, like, everyone talks about clear cuts and all this kind of stuff to go to. There was nothing there. So, like,
yep.
imagine the New York where you hunt is kind of like where my cabin was here in PA.
Oh, yeah, that would be very similar.
So what are you looking for when you go in to there if there's no clear cuts?
I used to, well, I still do. I hunt a ton of beech thickets, beech brush. You don't need logging for that to regenerate. Mm-hmm. It's very, you know, powerful plant or tree. Like it can do very well in a lot of different areas. And there's some really great beech thickets that are very good, especially that time of year for bedding. You're always hoping for a good mass crop, you know, acorns,
yep.
Maybe some beech nuts too. You know, if you can have, you know, your natural mast. There's not a lot of browse sources over there. Usually late in the fall, talking like mid, late November, mm-hmm. and even December, a lot of the deer are digging up fern roots. They're eating bulbs as far as everyone's talking about fern roots lately anymore.
Yeah.
But honestly, they dig up all kinds of plants and bulbs. Like there's so many different plants that are perennial plants that come mm-hmm. up year after year, just like someone would have in like their, you know, their flower garden. And the deer will dig up those bulbs too. There's actually quite a bit of carbohydrates in some of them. So
oh, yeah.
It's usually once you get, you know, several frosts and some good cold weather and a lot of that green growth and browse dies off, the deer will transition to digging a lot of that stuff up.
Yeah.
So, you know, just a lot of just natural type browse and those situations. But overall, I mean, in my opinion, there's too many deer over there. You know, I'm sure a lot of people would say there's no such thing as too many deer, but yeah. I don't need to see 59 deer in one day. And, you know, if I hunted a week and saw a good buck and maybe a handful of does, like I'm more, and that's just my own opinion, but I'm more of a mature big yep. buck hunter. So when you have too many deer, it definitely can also have an impact on the health of the deer in the area, antler mm-hmm. growth, big buck. So
yep.
it's not as attractive to me as Pennsylvania.
So do you think, in your opinion, and for my opinion, I think they should start an antler restriction now from just what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's what they should do up there in PA, New York?
Or New York? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's been some talk about it, but, you know, it's just one of those things. It all sounds good to us, but I think there's a lot of other people that would disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there's people that in certain parts of New York that love those higher deer numbers, love shooting spikes and 4 points, and I can't say that that's wrong, but it all boils down to majority. Like, does the majority of the hunters want to see bigger deer? Mm-hmm. Or do they want to see a lot of deer and shoot small bucks? And
right.
Wherever that majority is, I believe that they should be, you know, awarded. I don't mm-hmm. know if that's exactly how, you know, that is going right now.
Right.
Just have to wait and see. But when they look at their neighboring state that had similar results, like that's what you used to see 25, 30 years ago in Pennsylvania. And then now, I mean, I'm not saying Pennsylvania is the best state, but like people, when they hear Pennsylvania now, like they've seen enough especially on social media the past decade. Like, okay, you know, they got some deer over there.
Got some hammers.
So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it worked for us, and there's no doubt in my mind it would work over there because, at least in where I hunt, you know, big woods, it's very similar. We're actually, some of the deer that we hunt actually live in New York and PA because they cross back and forth over the line. But you know, overall, if they made those changes, I would bet almost anything that they would see similar results that Pennsylvania had.
Yeah, I could imagine. I mean, whole heck, well, even when Pennsylvania did it, I could imagine. Granted, this was a little before us. What was it? Like, before we were hunting.
Mm, mm. You know, I think it was 2002,
yeah,
wasn't it?
We were, what, second grade? Right. Yeah, so we were only in second grade at that point. So, you know, it was a little before we started, you know, hunting. But, like, from talking to people that were old enough to hunt around that time, there was a lot of pushback and a lot of, you know, negative comments and everything around it. But now, I mean, there's still that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, some people just can't get over it at this point.
Yeah.
No.
Yep. I can tell you, like, you know, I started hunting, I think it was 1998, and it was nothing for us to see. We probably would average, you know, 30 to 40 deer a day in gun season. But, like, my first year of hunting when I was 12, that's actually the only year I've never shot a PA buck. But I can't tell you how many doe I saw that year, like just probably a few hundred of them.
Yeah.
I kid you not. It was just does everywhere. And actually, just another funny story is, so it was me, my dad, and my sister hunting in this blind, just like a blind made out of sticks and branches and stuff. And we made an agreement that if there was a doe, my sister would shoot it because I had already shot a doe in archery.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a buck, I'll shoot it. So these group of deer come by, and, you know, my dad says he glassed them all, and he says, they're all doe. Go ahead. You know, this will be your sister's because they're just doe. So she shoots, and we get up there, and it's a spike buck, like a legal spike.
Yeah.
And I was so upset because I wanted a buck so bad, and, like, I didn't even glass or look at the deer or anything. I trusted my dad. So I just always look at it like potentially every year that I've been legally allowed to hunt, I could have got a buck in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But that's all you would see. Like if you, 9 out of 10 hunters would have shot a spike back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's just what is out there. Spikes and 4 points, like, you know, if there used to be like a thing at our camp, if you shot a buck with a fork on it, like that was almost like a reward. Like,
oh, yeah.
Holy cow, it was not a spike. You got a 3-point or a 4-point.
Yep.
And now you can shoot a 100-inch 8-point, and nobody even comes out to look at it in the back of the truck anymore because that's not even considered a good buck.
Yep, so yep.
It's just amazing how it's changed.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, up my camp, it was, oh, man, I forget when that thing was built. I think it was in the early 70s. 60s and it's 1960, something like that.
Yeah.
But they have the old camp rosters up there.
Yep.
And
too.
And it's cool because I can look back at those old ones and like see like what they were getting, and like now for back in that time, the deer they were getting were some really nice deer. Like it was like 8s, 6s, you know, all that kind of stuff back in like the 70s, 80s.
Wow.
And back in those mountains, like it's. There's definitely, like, I know for a fact there's big deer back in there. I see them, but, like, it's hard to get back in there. But, like, I think that's the coolest part. Like, you hear the spikes. Like, my grandfather shot a bunch of spikes when he was, you know, went back in those days. My dad shot spikes. Like, I shot a few button bucks when I was browned down. You know, it's, I feel like you have to get stuff underneath your belt, especially when you're young.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
And I even think that, I think they got rid of it a few years ago. The seniors, they still have to follow the antler restriction law. I feel like when you get to a certain age and you get that, what's that tag? The lifetime tag.
Yeah.
I think if you get that senior lifetime tag, I think that you should be able to shoot brown down.
Yeah, I would be fine with that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, there's a lot of seniors that have lost their confidence. So to know that, oh, I can shoot anything, like, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, my grandfather, I mean, he just wants to see deer, you know? Like, and he'll shoot, I mean, I don't care if he shoots a button buck. I don't care, like, anyone. If they want to shoot a button buck, like, that's on them. It's their tag, you know? But I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it anymore. I've done it before.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that needs to be a thing again, is brown down for the seniors and for the youth.
Like, I think that's a great idea.
Let's make it happen. We'll start writing letters to the game commission. Yep. We'll make it happen.
I could have swore, wasn't it like that though? Like, wasn't the seniors, didn't they, for a while, it was like, there was no antler restrictions for seniors, I thought.
I can't remember. I do know that seniors are allowed to use a rifle in that muzzleloader season to shoot a doe. At least they were.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember about the antler restrictions. I do know that military doesn't have antler restrictions. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I did not know that.
Yep. Ooh. Yep. I've at least as of 2 years ago, because I've had clients that were in the military, and then I also knew a guy that was in the military that shot a spike. So, yep, they had that. So military, you know, actively listed at the time you were allowed to shoot anything.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yep.
Well, you got me convinced to go to New York to hunt, because I was always on the fence. It was just kind of like, I have to, you know, bite the bullet and just go.
Yeah.
But I have to go get all of a bunch of doe tags, because apparently you said there's a bunch of doe. So I'll get a bunch of doe tags.
I can't speak for the whole state, but at least where I've hunted, and I've heard other reports elsewhere, but it's a good chance it's going to be different, more deer, I think.
Oh, yeah. But they can't add an antler restriction until I tie my dad. I have this thing. My dad has shot everything from a spike to a 6-point so far in his life. Spike, 3, 4, 5, and a 6.
Right.
I have a 6-point, and that's it. And I was like, I can tie my dad if I hunt out of state where they don't have antler restrictions. So I need to get a spike and a 3-point. I mean, technically, I could shoot a 3-point here in PA as long as it's on a one-sided 3-point and the other side's gone. And then, was it a 4?
Yep.
And a 5.
Yep.
So I need to, I would just go to New York to get the spike and the 3.
Yep.
And then they can put antler restrictions in after that.
Yeah, well, definitely, at least where I hunt, you know, I'm not saying anything's easy, but I would, to get a spike, like, there's plenty of them, let me just say that. So
nice.
I think I'd probably start at the bottom and try to work my way up. I think them spikes, 3s and 4s, will come quite easily for you.
Yeah.
Done. I'm making it happen now. My chances of living my dream are increasing every day.
So how did the, you said that, you know, it was warm during the rut this year for, I mean, pretty much anywhere here in PA. But how did your guiding service go this year? What was the percentage like and stuff like that?
I still think it was pretty decent. We usually have around 30-some percent success rate. And so we had a little over 30 clients and killed 9 this year. So maybe slightly down.
Okay.
But here's another thing. Look at it this way is, so we guide, like, last week of October and then first 2 weeks of November as far as archery goes. And when you – kind of another thing that hurt us hard is I tried to reschedule probably 6 or 7 clients that were supposed to come – they were supposed to come late the first week and early the second week. And I was like, I'm looking at this forecast, like, I'm just telling you, it's not worth coming.
Yeah.
I'd love to see you come. I swear to God, I told them all this. I said, I'd love to see you get here on the 11th and then hunt from the 12th into that last week, because I just knew, it was going to be, couldn't have asked for better weather conditions.
Yeah.
And I pushed, like I said, we actually didn't have, or we only had one guy that committed to that, and that's the guy that killed that one Pope and Young buck. He said he could readjust. Every other one said, I'd rather just not come at all, and, you know, then I'll, you know, maybe we can work something out next year. So I lost, you know, 5 or 6 clients, you know, toward, you know, so the, basically the one last stretch of guiding, we only had a few clients. And then even during that prime stretch, I only had one guy for a few days.
Oh, wow.
When it was really hot. So we really missed out because when we had, you know, we have 3 or 4, the 12th and 13th, 3 or 4 guys, that's when we killed them, 2 real good ones. And everyone, you know, I mean, it was just great, but those guys had to leave on Sunday. So,
yeah,
like I said, if we would have had some guys going into that last week, I really think we could have got a few more good deer. Because that's when, you know, judging, you know, reading cards and all my trail cam intel, like, that's when it was happening the best.
That's when it was popping off there in that week, yeah.
Exactly, yep. Yeah. And normally, another thing is we usually don't guide at all that week because I actually go hunt New York archery that week. But I was so, like felt so bad for some of these guys. Like I said, I won't hunt New York. I'll just leave I'll leave this week wide open for you guys, and I'll guide you. And most of them, like I said, couldn't make it. So I actually never even got to sit in a tree stand and bow hunt in New York this past season, just because the other thing that happened was we got snow that week, and I have a snow removal business. So between the one guy that I had staying around and then snow plowing, like I said, my New York archery didn't happen this past season. So
yeah.
Kind of bummed out, but, you know, like I said, I rarely complain about what I do because I've been very blessed. And just being able to be in the woods, whether I'm hunting or guiding, like 6-7 days a week, you can't complain.
Yeah.
No.
Not one bit at all.
No.
Did you, we had that basically a drought all summer.
Yeah.
Did it, because we saw a big change with deer activity up at our cabins, you know, because of that and everything. Did you see a drastic change over where you're at as well?
Definitely. And we were about 4 or 5 days behind that shift. I didn't see anything major as far as deer shifting their patterns till about late October, early November. It seemed like, here's another thing too to pay attention to, is once all the green browse dried up, or because things started to get cold and, you know, less daylight, that's where deer are getting a lot of their water from what they eat. So then what happens is when they're not getting any water up high near bedding, is they're eating, because when they're bedding, they're eating all day too. They'll often shift a little bit closer to water. Well, the only water was that main bottom stream in every valley, and the does shifted first. And then so once the bucks got a little more eager to be around them, it seemed like everything for us was down low roughly the first 10 days in November till we got that 2-inch rainfall. And then things started to shift somewhat higher, but still there was more activity lower this year than usual. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I did, actually. So once again, heading back to the top of the mountain where the 4 scrapes were under this tree, there was one, like, it was like a bunch of pine trees, all that kind of stuff, with it's almost like a thermal hub coming down there. There was multiple points dropping down, multiple streams coming down in there, and there's a bunch of scrapes down in there. And that's the first time I ever saw it. And, like, it was right before that 2-inch rainfall that we got.
Yep.
I mean, that's definitely have seen that. Yeah.
Yep. No, and we, in 2020, we had a very similar situation, and I really did screw up. Like, I had actually, in all my life, at least as I've been old enough to pay attention to these kind of things, I've never hunted in drought conditions and saw the impact that it has on the deer in my area. So I learned how to handle this in 2020, but the tricky thing is figuring it out when it happens. Like, it's one of those things where, okay, I knew there was drought conditions, but yet monitoring cameras and what clients are seeing, and I didn't, you know, late October, we were still seeing good activity up high. And then, so we get this warm weather, you know, in November, and, you know, we weren't seeing anything up high, but then I'm thinking, okay, well, it's the weather, too, because it's warm, they're not moving. Because I would get night pictures up high, too, and then, unfortunately, we failed to check some of our creek bottom cameras for 4 or 5 days, and then it was actually my dad, you know, because he helps me some.
Mm-hmm.
He checked a few creek bottom cameras probably around, like, November 4th or November 5th. He's like, man, it's happening. Daylight, you know, activity big time down in some of these creek bottoms. I just checked the cameras, and then that's when it all made sense. I'm like, yeah, they shifted because now that it's warm and, you know, it's pushed everything down low closer to that's where the only water source is. So I felt we were 4 or 5 days behind. We still probably could have had a little more success in that real warm weather if we would have been hunting those creek bottoms more.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel that way, too. If I would have hunted the creek bottoms more instead of going up top all the time, especially like in the early part of October when it was still warm out, hunting down around those creeks, I definitely think I could have seen more.
Yep, exactly.
Down there.
And that's just another thing. Think about it, too, is when the rut is on and, you know, no matter what, I talk like sometimes like they're not moving at all. There's more movement in November than there is a lot of other times of the year mm-hmm. during the season. So even if it's warm, there's still better odds of movement. But they need water more than they got their winter coats on. It's 70 degrees. They're going to be, you know, drinking water several times a day. And if the only water is way down in those bottoms, they're probably going to set up shop down there. And mm-hmm. that's something in the future, you know, we need to get ahead of that shift before waiting 3, 4, 5 days to see when it happens.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yep.
What's the earliest, and you might not even have an answer to this, but when's the earliest you've seen a buck locked down with a doe?
Oh, people probably think I'm crazy. I've seen it the second week of October before. That was in my own hunting experience. 100%
right.
Sure. It was like probably 120, 125-inch 8-point. Literally, I mean, you can tell when a lot of times you'll see a younger deer do this early in the season, kind of push a doe around.
Okay.
This buck, like, was all over this doe, like, almost trying to breed her.
Mm-hmm.
You can just tell by his body language. And I saw him with her for 2 days in a row. That's another thing, too,
yeah.
out of the same tree. Like, there's does coming in heat. Is literally in October, like
mm-hmm.
first week of October. I bet you, I couldn't tell you a number, but in every county, I would argue with anyone, there's probably at least one doe in heat first week of October. Like, it doesn't all happen in 1 week.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm not saying every area or whatever, every township, but there's the rut. Like, for instance, my one buddy, he owns a deer farm, and he bought a doe last February
mm-hmm.
and put it in his fence with his buck in February just because he thought, well, you know, nothing's going to happen and rut's over with.
Right.
Well, sure enough, he ended up breeding her in February last year and had a fawn.
Wow.
So the does can come in heat more than what people think.
Yeah.
I actually saw a buck or a group of bucks last year shed hunting late January, I saw like 3 bucks just hammering, chasing a doe. Can't tell me she's not in heat.
Yeah.
There's that peak time frame, like, in my opinion, the first 2 to 3 weeks of November, I would say that's when most does are bred.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree to that. But yet, does can come into heat a little bit later in the winter. You have freak things like early October or maybe further into the winter, like, it's not all what some people think, that little
right.
short 2 or 3 week window.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that, too. I mean, I saw one lockdown with a doe October 28th this
yep.
year.
Yeah.
And it was a really nice buck, too. Like, really nice buck. And it was sure. down here in farm country. So, like, I mean, we have the Amish who push it out. So, like, to see that big yep. buck is like, dang, that's a nice buck.
Yeah.
But also, how did you, the Halloween is always yeah. a big, big day for everyone. Did you see a lot of activity here on Halloween?
Halloween. Yeah. Well, we did. A client killed yeah. a buck Halloween.
Okay.
We didn't see a ton Halloween. We did have a good spike in activity Obviously, I think Halloween was a Monday, so you couldn't hunt Sunday, which that Sunday on the cameras was really good.
Yeah,
of course.
That 27th, 28th, 29th periods, they were pretty decent. Not as good as what they normally are, and I really don't know why, because I thought we had decent weather.
Mm-hmm.
We should have had better movement, but my top 5 days were, if I don't have my book or my information with me, but I'm 99.9% sure the top 5 days up this area is based on, mainly my trail cam intel would be November 13th, November 12th, November 19th, and then October 30th and October 28th, I believe.
Okay.
28th or 27th. So my point is, still late October, still ranked in the top five as some of those best days of the season.
Yeah.
So, and I've seen that many years. I did a post today where I posted the past 10 PA bucks I've killed in archery season. And I believe six have been in late October.
Okay. All right.
It's a great, great time of year to be in the woods.
Yeah. Cause I was out, October 29th in the morning, and I saw two buck, you know, I had a 7.8 yards, and then I had a little 4 point come below me, like all within an hour. So like I saw good movement that day for only being out half the day. I wanted to be out all day, but my buddy had a party that I had to go to, unfortunately. I don't think I went out Halloween day. I think I went out November 1st.
Yep.
But yeah, like I saw some good activity then.
And, you know, I can't say this is the same throughout other parts of the country, but I'm getting more to the point where I only hunt on the right weather conditions. Just for here, I'm very fortunate. I don't get to hunt quality. Like, I rarely ever get, like, a day to, like, scout for myself. But I do get to hunt some every day, especially once the rut comes. Like, there's not a day I don't get to hunt, like, unless I'm helping someone track or whatever. But usually every morning, unless we leave one sit and I got to help look over, you know, leave it go overnight and I got to look in the morning. But I can almost always get a couple hours of hunting every morning this season. So I feel like I have enough time where, and I look back, like, I kill all my deer on these best weather days, and I feel like I should be doing better things. I can probably do more scouting for my clients, or I feel like I don't need to be actually hunting as much except those prime days, because that's when I'm having my success.
And that's what I think I'm going to be doing next year, is making sure it's like a good day to be out, not just going out just to go out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not trying to tell anyone they shouldn't hunt, because hunting is more than just killing. But when you have a family, when you got other priorities, things to do at home, like, you're beating yourself up hunting every day, and then, like, you're killing these deer on these days when you know, like, I knew November 12th, like, not bragging, but, like, I was like, I really think it can happen today versus, like, November 5th when it's 75 degrees. I'm, like, sweating, and I'm like, I just don't have the confidence, and I'm not seeing what I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, I think someone, if you have the flexibility in your life and your job, I think you can definitely just focus more during those prime weather conditions.
100%.
Especially with these northern mountain bucks, they're very affected by weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's also the big shift from velvet to hardhorned.
Yep, you'll see way different activity.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we have four listener questions here.
Okay.
So I'm trying to look at my phone right now. It's like in the middle of the table. Ideal rut hunting spots and specific dates you target in the big woods.
Yep. So I would say late October I would be on hot scrapes. Ideally anywhere from October 25th to Halloween. I love to hunt scrapes, you know, hot scrapes, especially scrapes if you have multiple mature bucks in an area. Kind of similar to what you said you had found, although I don't know for sure what kind of history you had with deer on those scrapes. But if you have certain spots where it seems like every year you're getting a good buck or two or several on camera on these scrapes. I really think that late October, you know, prime with good, the right weather, the right weather yep. conditions. I've had a ton of luck doing that. And then also, once you get into the rut, it sounds crazy, but I've had a lot of luck just staying on hunting around groups of does. Like, 4 out of 5 sits, I just see does, but then all of a sudden one comes in the heat one day mm-hmm. and then it's on fire. So that's kind of always been where I've had a lot of success in November. Also, another thing that it's been more, learning from trail cameras, but it seems like in November I have some really good travel corridors that, once again, on the right days when the movement's really good, similar to what, say, we had November 13th, like a lot mm-hmm. of these travel corridors, you could have killed a really good deer, too, in the past couple of years that I've monitored. So but that would probably break out, several different times of the season in different ways I would have success and be yeah. confident hunting.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to follow the group of doe thing, because mm-hmm. Up at the cabin, there's a group of doe that they're always around our cabin.
Yep.
So I feel like if I just kind of noticed how the doe are moving, those specific ones, yep. then I know the buck come around. They mm-hmm. always do every year.
Yep. Yeah, the biggest key is not to overpressure them, though. Like, mm-hmm. those does, in my opinion, they're not as smart as mature bucks, or they'll put up with more pressure, but yet you don't want to hunt those, just focus on that one group of does the entire rut. You want to have 4 or 5 good doe bedding areas or doe groups patterned. Honestly, just stay around them during the rut and guarantee big deer show up.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's see. Next question we got. Thought on moon phases.
Fog phase or moon phase?
Oh, thought. I guess I didn't say
thoughts.
Like,
yeah.
Thought. Sorry. thought on thought? on the moon phase. Hunting moon phases.
There's some years when I, look at the moon data and I see accuracy. I see things like this past season. I swear I saw consistencies with the moon. Not for mature bucks, but November 8th ended up being a top, probably a top 5 day for buck movement. Not
I
mature,
saw that
but
too.
I think we had probably, I think 20 buck photos that day, but I don't think I have one mature, there were 2 and 3 year olds moving.
Yeah.
But if I remember right, November 8th was a full moon. And then also I saw a spike in movement October 8th. Another full moon that started on October 8th. That was probably the first or number one or number two day, best day that was in the first 10 days of October.
Okay.
The year prior, I saw hardly any things with the moon. Other years I have.
Yeah.
I'm probably not the best guy to ask about moon. It seems to be more inconsistent, although yet mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense that it's inconsistent, because moon cycles aren't like weather. I mean, they cycle, and if you get a full moon, you think you would see the right activity, unless it has to do something with the amount of daylight. Which,
right.
Basically, if the biggest or best answer to the question is, I do believe the moon has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's your main focus, though. Don't put all your money on moon phases. I would put more money on the weather than moon.
Yeah, yeah. Now, yep. those days, like October 8th, November 8th, did yep. you see the more activity in the morning or in the evening or middle of the day, or if you remember?
Yeah, I haven't gone through that yet. Just trying to think off the top of my head. See, I do know November 8th. Was a decent weather day. It was somewhere in the 50s for a high, and then in the morning it was 32 or below, which
okay.
generally is really good. So the weather had an impact too.
Right.
But also, then again, October 8th, I know, was a fairly decent weather day too. Mm-hmm. So it could also be a combination of weather and full moon phase that triggers an even greater spike. That could very well be what we're seeing.
Right.
But I can't remember... I can't remember certain times, nor did I pay enough attention, but
yeah.
I go back through my cards like weekly, and I like to keep combing over data. Like, I might just pick one topic sometimes and be like, I want to go back through all these cards and see what moon had effect or time of day or wind direction. Like, there will be something you could probably ask me at a later time.
Yeah. Oh, we'll definitely ask you at a later time. Yeah. Yeah.
It'll happen. Don't you worry. Let's see. Last one here. We got the postseason plans and strategies going into the postseason and getting ready for next year.
Yes, I would contribute most of my success to postseason scouting. But I will tell you, postseason scouting is not like, okay, I see what they did last year, and that's going to happen this year. So all I got to do is find what the sign was, how the deer used these areas, and then set my stands up accordingly, and I'm going to kill something. Like,
right.
Telling you, in the big woods, it's not like that, nope. Especially public land, and you have no control over habitat, you know, hunting pressure. There's different things that are going to happen every year that are going to change what these deer are doing.
Mm-hmm.
However, though, there's still a lot of good information to be learned. Getting to know your area is better. I still always also start out at what the deer did last year and then adapt as the season goes on. This right now, for instance, is a great time of year. This is the starting point, is what I want to say.
And right.
I'm picking out things that I'm seeing now. And it always seems to get you in the ballpark next year, which is better than not being on the field at all.
Yeah.
But it rarely ever puts you, like, in, if we're going to keep using that analogy, rarely ever puts you in scoring position,
yep.
But it gets you close. It's just it'll just be some adjustments that you have to make. So
yeah.
It really narrows things down, but not completely.
So what are you looking for when you go out this time of year in January, February? What are you looking for? Those heavy trails, scrapes, bedding areas?
All of the above that you found. Also, like, I pay big attention to where I'm finding bedding, beds. Mm-hmm. I really look hard on where mass trees are. Like, although there's certain areas, like, I mean, obviously it's big, massive amounts of ground here. I'll be like, you know, I don't know if that ridge has any oak on it, or is there oak on the north side that's more likely for bedding? Because, for instance, north side oak with cover generally is dynamite for bedding because it's a leeward situation. We get a lot of south winds throughout October. So little things like that is what I'm looking for. Just real quick, someone's probably going to say, well, Steve, you've said before you don't focus heavily on the wind as far as how bedding goes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I mean. I have a lot of areas that there might be really good cover on a west side, and then there's not much that would attract the buck on maybe the north side that might be a little more leeward. Like, if you can put food and cover and leeward wind on one side, you're going to have dynamite buck bedding situation.
Like, oh, for sure.
Little things like that is what you want to look for.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you found many bucks bedding on points? Like buck beds on points?
Yeah, I find quite a few on points. I'm always, my two biggest keys, though, are always hunting pressure and cover. Like, those seem to be the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
High elevations generally, too. And then, if I can find the best of all worlds and find some good leeward spots, it just makes that bedding way more consistent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then are you running your cameras over that all year?
I probably won't this coming year because I want to spread my cameras out better. I don't think I'm going to do much early season hunting. I had quite a few clusters of cameras around buck bedding this year that I never even got to hunt. Like, and then those bucks generally shift once we get closer into the rut, where I feel like I wasted a lot of time leaving those cameras there unless I was going to hunt those situations.
Right.
So I'm probably in the past I've had great success doing that with clustering cameras around bedding, but this year I want to use more of my cameras just for mainly my own, like my business guiding, you know, I want to put everything out there to do as good as I can for my clients.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So last question before we wrap this up here. Yep. When you say clustered, cause we've had multiple people on that talk about clustering cameras, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think I'm doing it the right way, but can you explain what you mean by clustering cameras?
Yep. Now this analogy here goes back to like the ball field situation, just not a coincidence, but, and this won't always work out. However, look at it this way, like in a baseball field, you have left field, center field, right field, then you got the infield, then you got home plate. So home plate is probably going to be where your stand is, where you plan to kill that deer, but yet you probably want to, you need to have a camera at that spot.
Yeah.
Although you rarely check that camera. You focus more on cameras in the outfield where there's going to be less intrusion, or that deer is like, okay, I know there's intrusion back here, but I'm not too worried because nothing's around home plate. But you're using left field, center field, right field to still give you direction on what's going on maybe at home plate, if that kind of makes sense.
Like, yeah, that makes sense.
I usually have cameras back off that I'm trying to get something. Like, for instance, too, I love to have cameras down in creek bottoms where you get still mainly night activity except certain periods of the rut, but yet a lot of those bucks are coming down off of them ridges down in the creek bottoms every night, sometimes even half hour, hour after dark. But I can use that creek bottom camera is like, okay, you can see where he's coming from off this ridge half hour after dark. I know he's got to be bedding up on that ridge.
Right.
Then I might have a couple cameras in a line going up that ridge that, okay, or maybe I'll have three or four up there. Then when I do decide I want to hunt that deer and I haven't checked those cameras, say, in a month or two, you do a quick camera check. Okay, what's going on here? Oh, it looks like he's using this path or hitting this grate more often. Bingo, you set up over there, but yet you didn't check those cameras very often until right before you want to kill that deer.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm in the right idea of what I'm doing. I just have to put more cameras out in this location to see if I can possibly get this buck nailed down, because he's a big 10-point. Hopefully he survived rifle season down here.
Yeah.
He's going to be bigger next year.
A lot of our deer made it this year. We had very mild, like tough, didn't have much snow and gun season. So
right.
I bet your chances are good.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. The Amish probably pushed him out, though. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Steve, where can people follow along with you, get a hold of you if they want to, all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, they can find me on social media, either Shirk's Guide Service on Instagram or Facebook. I don't have a website anymore. Mm-hmm. I was actually just getting an overwhelming amount of feedback and calls and emails, and I had to eliminate something. Plus, I was never great at managing my website anyway, so...
Yep.
I don't have a website anymore, but I seem to do okay with the social media stuff. And 9 out of 10 hunters anymore seems like they have social media anyway. So
yep.
Feel free to look me up on there. Shoot me a message. I do still have, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 spots left for my actual guided hunts this year, if anyone's interested.
Okay.
That's about it. I don't expect them to last another few more weeks.
Yeah.
We also are doing a do-it-yourself semi-guided camp as well this year, if someone would be interested in that. It would be a little bit more at a reasonable price. Plus, kind of the main reason why I'm doing it is I get so many people that, like, and I would probably be the same way, like, don't really want to be guided, but I just want to be pointed in the right direction. So that's a service that's going to be available too this coming season.
And that's just for people outside of PA, correct?
You know, I can't say that. Let me put it to you this way. I prefer people out of PA, and the only reason why is it's tricky because, you know, we don't start guiding till the rut, and then it puts people in a weird situation when they have one PA buck tag and they've booked a hunt, and we also don't want to lose you. So if you kill a deer or kill a buck, you know, it really becomes more of a negative impact on what our plans, and usually, like, sometimes it's like a day or two before the client comes to hunt. They're like, I shot my buck, and then we can't fill that spot.
Right.
So, you know, it's always nice if we can get out-of-state guys that we know we didn't have any impact on their early part of hunting season, and, you know, they come here good and happy, and versus some PA guy that had to hold out the whole season. So that's the only reason why we would prefer a non-resident.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's completely understandable. I mean, honestly, like, it's hard to hold out till the rut, especially if you see him, if you get a buck routine during early October, September, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Well, Steve, thank you for coming on here. I'm glad we were able to make this work, and it's been awesome talking to you, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. You all keep in touch, and hopefully, you know, we'll talk again before next season, but if not, best of luck to both of you.
You too, man.